bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hello, everybody.
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Bryce. Mm-hmm. What up?
So I heard about something over the past week or two, and I wasn't convinced it was a real thing. And then it was made very abundantly clear that it was a real thing. You guys,
I'm going to interrupt right now. That's the world we live in, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you hear this crazy sort of like, maybe?
Because there's so much like, oh, there's big headline. And then so much of it's like, that's just the headline. That's not actually, it's more nuanced or it's not even real, the headline. Like, there's so much of that. And it was a friend who was telling me about it. And so that's what got me to look into it. You guys, do you both have Spotify? Or?
My wife does. My wife has one. Periodically, if there's something exclusive to Spotify, then I'll just use her account.
Got it. Andrew, do you Spotify or Apple Music, or do you just buy music?
I just buy music.
Buy music. If I listed off some of the most popular Spotify artists, or some of the most popular artists on Spotify, let's play a little game and see how many you know. Just for example, okay? Because Justin especially keeps up with modern, you know, contemporary music. All right, how about this one? With 23.6 million plays, Charlie Key. Anybody? No?
No.
It was him and the Chocolate Factory, right? That old kerfuffle.
How about this? 24.2 million streams, Karen Borg.
No.
Yeah.
Let me ask the question: is 23 million streams a lot in that world? Considering like a lot of them are would be replays and whatever, and if like
it is pretty, it is a significant amount.
Okay.
How about 16.2 million streams? They Dream by Day.
No. Anybody?
No, I'm out on that one.
It doesn't surprise me that I also do not know any of these artists. These are a part of 50 artists that musicbusinessworldwide.com investigated and found to be quote unquote fake artists on Spotify.
What?
And
so what are they? What is the music?
So it's real music. These tend to be artists who are on some of the curated playlists of Spotify. So like Music to Sleep To or, party anthems. No, that would be more pop stuff. But some of their curated playlists that get a lot of play, you know, they're promoted very heavily. And so what it turns out, so there's... This is a little bit of news, a little bit of reading tea leaves, a little bit of inference, but apparently these artists are contracted or are licensed through a company called Epidemic, which is a production publishing house. So if you think of like APM,
and the name that's more clever 3 months ago.
So Epidemic is like one of many companies that buys up copyrights to music and licenses it out royalty free. We use a similar service for Scam Nation stuff. Plenty of your content creators that you know and love pay a service to access a library of songs, kind of a Spotify for creators. But now those artists are on Spotify and they are being promoted, quote unquote, promoted by Spotify by being put in these very high rotation playlists. But many of these acts are, most of these acts are being going through this Epidemic company. Now there are kind of two issues with this. I'm going to finish all the setup and then we can get it. So the two issues are, these are not, Epidemic is not acting like a music pub, or is not acting like a traditional music label, right? They're not passing along the Spotify money to the artist. Normally in a royalty-free situation, the artist would get no money. They would have already been paid up front. Epidemic has said they give the artists 50% of what their revenue from Spotify would be, just out of the goodness of their heart. But the other thing is that these millions and millions of streams still count against the public pool for revenue share. So the way Spotify works is all of the money that subscribers pay goes into a big pot. And then all of the plays for, say, the month are put into a different pot, and that money is allocated based on overall plays.
Based on that, yeah.
Right. So if you pay $10 a month and you only listen to Lady Gaga, Lady Gaga doesn't get $10 from you. She gets whatever the value of your plays are according versus everybody else. So it becomes, that's why a play on Spotify might only earn an artist a fraction of a cent. And now there are millions of plays that Spotify has seems to have some sort of deal with this Epidemic company that are, quote unquote, watering down the pool, the play pool, right?
Gotcha. Wait, so this is, there is some organization between Epidemic and Spotify? Like there's, there seems to be some kind of collusion there?
So Spotify has said that they pay out all of the artists on their service, which would make sense if Epidemic is giving artists 50% of their streaming revenue. But most of the music from these Epidemic artists don't seem to be on other streaming services. And that many millions of plays of artists being pushed into these playlists where more established or more worthy artists or more like real people artists could have those slots.
Yeah, unpack this for me. So the issue is that there are a bunch of different artists, but actually this we'll call it a label owns all those artists and gets 100% of the royalties from that. So every time one of these people gets played, whatever, Epidemic is actually the one who's receiving that, and the money does not go to the artist because Epidemic reached an agreement with whoever they bought the music from.
Epidemic has said that they split the Spotify money 50-50 with the artist. Yeah. But in any other normal instance where Epidemic would use any of the music that they buy and own the copyright for, the artist would not get any royalties because they do not go through a performing rights organization like BMI or right. ASCAP.
So what's the issue?
So the issue is, and I guess this is where it gets into an After Things sort of issue, is if you are a musician and you know that people are using streaming services are a huge deal, what could you do about, and not just about this, but also in response to this, right?
What?
If you looked at this in a certain way, it would look like Spotify paying or making a deal where they had to pay out much, much less to quote unquote real artists and writing off or having some amount of the monthly pot go to, you know, pseudonymed composers making royalty free work, right? Like it's almost like the Netflix original idea, except Netflix's contract is using the brand power of directors and actors and actresses.
I mean, if it's apportioned by like per minute played or seconds played or however they do the math or whatever, like whether even it's something in house, I don't have an issue. I mean, to me, like. I look at my frustration with Twitter started from the moment you sign up for Twitter. They're like, hey, you should follow Taylor Swift or follow Ellen, you know, and like, I'm like, okay, so you've decided who the winners and losers are on this platform already. We live in that world, and we live in a world where if Taylor Swift has a new song, it's on Spotify, they're going to heavily promote it. You know, she's going to be in the artwork. She's going to be in this. They've already decided winners and losers. And if once they decided that, I'm not going to be upset that if some third party company, you know, is putting 1,000, you know, artists that they own outright and getting all the revenue from it, because it's like, it's already stacked against the indie. It's already stacked against you, you know, and it doesn't bother me because in many ways it, you know, it means there's more opportunities because like, you know, Bryce, you know, you and a group of friends could say, you know what, we're going to put a ton of songs out there under one brand name, under one name, so we can increase our footprint, our likelihood of being heard. Great. You can play at that too. You know, you could create a music collective, you know, and I think we've got to rethink the way labels work and brands work and these things work, because I see whereas others see chaos, I see a ladder.
Sure. I mean, I think number one, new boss, same as the old boss, right? This sounds a lot to me like payola and deals that radio stations made with certain labels to ensure some kind of result. The difference here is that it seems like the major labels are going to be the ones that are the most upset, because Spotify is kind of eating innings with cheaper content, and they're making a choice to put these in those coveted curated slots, which really that's the biggest thing that I think you're keying on, is that it's fine if Epidemic is just throwing out a ton of royalty free music and they're just renaming. It's basically like the dude who does Incompetech.com, like Kevin MacLeod, which is used in like half of YouTube Everything. And podcasts, right? Because it's royalty free and it's good enough, and he's a prolific creator. It's basically like they took him and they just renamed him a bunch of stuff, a bunch of different names, threw that in these like a curated playlist, and now all of a sudden they have this gigantic thing. So I don't know. I mean, I view it as you always got to be careful about whenever you're dealing with one central authority on anything, specifically in terms of entertainment, but this does not exactly shock me.
So I just reading through the article here, then this is from 3 years ago, but they point out, they say that the criticism of the labels is that the unfounded, but the suspicion is that Spotify has reached an agreement with Epidemic where Spotify will pay Epidemic less money per play in exchange for promotion or inclusion on those lists. So the idea is that, you know, they're saying, well, Epidemic, like, if you guys will take a little bit less play, we'll give you promotion. So instead of having to pay, you know,
somebody
having to pay a different company. Cause if we're just going to if it's going to be a playlist of easy listening stuff, we'll put you in there, because if we put this other record company in there, we have to pay them full freight. But if we pay you 50%, then we get to keep the other part of that. And I'm I have no problem with that, because part of it is that, like, these are things where often, because you're not seeking the artist out by name, it's like, yeah, play something in the background. Our enemy is not going to be, you know, another human being trying to lower the value of this product. Our enemy is going to be the completely AI-generated background music sort of thing that's coming at us. It's going to come from the point when humans are completely removed from the equation. Because there's music where you say, I want to listen to music by this artist. Then there's another genre of music, easy listening, this other sort of stuff, where it's just filler, and it can be good filler. And that's humans are going to be out of that equation very soon. In many cases, they already are. Sure. And so I see the record companies are upset because they see the value of what they provide is dropping, and it's dropping because now they have to compete with indies. They have to compete with you in your home studio making tracks. You know, record companies, you know, might spend millions of dollars promoting somebody to do this, but on Spotify, I can say, you know, play me the latest Bryce, you know, Neshcom track as easily as I can say, play me the, you know, latest, you know, Owl City, whatever, okay, which I don't know if there is a latest one. It's very easy for me to say those two things, so the accessibility is there. I deal with this is my publisher is Amazon. I, you know, the largest, you know, retail company in the world is my publisher, so I get all the advantages that come with that. But also on that Amazon platform, anybody can compete with me. Anybody can write a book. And that's how I got into the game, because I started off as an indie trying to compete against, you know, major publishers. And I said, all right, on this platform, I can compete with you because I can write a good, I can write a great book, do a good description, a good cover, and I can do something you can't do. The publishers won't do is I can iterate fastly. I can update, I can change, and I can do things they just don't do. And built myself a career doing that. So I think there's opportunity there.
It's just a bummer. So the buddy who was telling me about this is more popular on Spotify than I am. And he has gotten some playlist, like getting on these playlists is a big deal because millions of people follow these playlists. They are like top of the thing. In some of them, like the music to fall asleep to, if people literally fall asleep to it, then that's hours of plays that get added to get added to the pot. It feels very different from, say, the Netflix original model, where it's they're either licensing stuff exclusively or commissioning stuff, where this is so much of music is supported by smaller artists that filling in those gaps with cheaper royalty-free music or sound alike, sound similar stuff is really it's a bad look for the platform.
Well, I'd say that the only thing people were complaining here were the big labels, were the ones that were upset because, you know, they were contingent upon. That was in that article I saw, was the ones that are complaining about that and some of the music licensing. And I understand that. I mean, in my role as a writer is I know that I am the platform that is making me is also the platform that I eventually will have to compete with, because that platform is looking for a way, like, how do we not have to pay this person this money? How do we maximize our profit here? And first, it comes from being more selective in the content they use. Then it comes from dealing special deals. Then it comes from finding out, can they do it themselves in-house and quickly? You know, you see that with Amazon Basics. You go to a grocery store and you see there's the house brands. You know, the house brands are the stuff that are knockoffs of conventional products. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the knockoff Oreo ends up displacing the original, you know, the Hydrox and et cetera. And I think it is frustrating, but it's also the music streaming services. And I've been having this conversation for years. The problem with that is, if we all switch to music streaming services, the actual available pie is way less than what it is when we have people still buying stuff a la carte. It sounds like it's a great thing, but it's like the problem Netflix has, is Netflix has signed everybody up who wants a Netflix account. Where do you go now? You raise prices. You know, that's the thing you do. And with music streaming, if you really look at that, then it becomes you say this is the total size of the pie once we all have subscriptions. Now we got to find ways to fight over those pieces of this. And we're seeing this, and I think that's like, to think that somebody's going to act nobly, we won't. Why would we expect them to? You know, we're not going to give up. You know, I'm not going to walk into a Walmart and go, man, you guys are charging me too little. Here's some extra money on the counter. You know, I don't buy ebooks and go, man, you saved me so much money in the print one. Here's some extra money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I mean, look, I think that these are just they're innings eaters. Right. And either if there is collusion between Epidemic and Spotify, then it is something that I think you can, as an artist, say, all right, well, we would expect you to be an honest broker and you're not. Although, again, I debate how much people should be surprised by that behavior. But even if they are not, there's always going to be those kinds of people. Right. Like there's going to be the Spider-Man and Elsa, you know, kind of like are on YouTube where they're just trying to rack up by whatever exploitation of the algorithm that they can just soak up seconds and minutes of watch time, like or listen time. That is always going to be a thing in this world, as long as that's the metric by which you are measured and successful, is how long you are watching or listening to something, then this content is not only inevitable, it's indeed encouraged.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, a remedy would be, if the labels are this upset, is, you know, the talk of pulling stuff from Spotify. If Spotify doesn't, you want disclosure, to ask Spotify, are you making these sweetheart deals? Are they doing this? You know, but part of
I'm not just repping for the major labels, by the way. Like the person who told me this is not represented by a major.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But I'm also saying, well, I guess my point is like saying that, like, Spotify by nature, because this is so much has to do with the playlists themselves, the playlists as being these containers of content. And that is a sort of a form of content that Spotify has created and said, well, if people don't want to ask for an artist, they will ask for a playlist. And that's a thing they control. That's a thing that they own and they have sort of like headspace on it. I think it's smart that they do this. I think it's smart that they do this because often, like I said, this is content where, you know, if it's one person, you know, hitting five different keys repeatedly on a keyboard versus a different person, I just want something to go to sleep to. And like I said, that the real threat's going to be, you know, the algorithm that's going to come down and, you know, game over, you know.
It's just annoying. It's just annoying to think like, the huge catalogs of these, especially if we're talking about something. Anyway,
I'll give you.
It's just frustrating, right? Like
we're coming from like like Justin are coming from a space where we had to continuously adapt. Like we built our magic business, our magic retail business, back when that's how we made our money through DVDs came out. DVDs made it very easy to manufacture and sell magic because you could produce a DVD for 80 cents. 80 yeah. cents in a case, an Amory case with a jacket, all this. So 80 cents per thing. Retail price would be $20, wholesale for $8, right? So 10 times markup on the physical product, right? It was great. It was a wonderful period of time because all of a sudden we could be selling these DVDs. I'd come up with a magic trick over a weekend, go call up the magic dealership on Monday, get an order for, you know, 1,000 units. And that was wonderful. Then the internet happened, you know, in a big, bigger sort of way. File sharing became, you know, ubiquitous, et cetera, what have you. And it got into the point, like, I knew we were done when I got a call from a guy who reviewed for a magazine. It was a newer Magic magazine. It wasn't Magic. He says, yeah, I just reviewed your newest DVD. I gave you a great review. I'm like, huh? Like, I would have sent you a copy. He's like, ah, don't worry. I downloaded it. And I'm like,
yeah,
you downloaded it. Like, yeah, well, I'm a reviewer and all this. And he had his justification for doing it. I'm like, dude, like, one, I would have sent it to you. Two, the fact that you just, you're casually downloading and justifying it to yourself to do this. And then this is a guy that, like, a year later, funny thing, he started selling magic DVDs and stuff and saw his stuff on FileShare and everything. So he started this organization to stop magic piracy. And I'm like, you're the problem. You know, you did yeah. this. And then when all of a sudden it came out of your pocket, you got angry about it. And I was, to me, it was like, we got to figure out something else because we had a good run. This was a cool thing, but now these things are free. And you watch, this is the period where Brian starts building up his YouTube channel where Brian's like, well, if people want stuff for free, and that's why YouTube exists in many ways, is because it was an answer to the problem with torrenting, because you couldn't, for any meaning, indie creators, you could not make money selling product. You had to put it on a platform like YouTube and go for an ad-based version of that. In music, we're watching this, the transition of this thing, like, hey, I use this platform, and this platform has all these listeners, which is great. They have the audience. And now I'm finding it harder to make money on there because they have that audience, and some of that audience does not care. They're not going to ask for my song by name. And if they're not going to ask me for it by name, then they're going to give them a generic, which is you go to the cereal aisle and what do you see? Lots of generics and stuff. And so this is inevitable in every single platform where if you don't have a name that people ask for, then yeah, you'll be replaced by a generic.
I guess I just don't know what someone should do. Assuming that is the trend of filling these services with cheaper stuff.
The only thing that you can have any expectation of is that Spotify is an honest broker, and whether they are blessing this like factory of cheap content, because they literally just want to make sure that they're knocking down all the, you know, Lady Gaga and Drake stream numbers, and that therefore the big number that they would have to pay out is less, or they have made a deal. Like, I think the desire for them to do that will be there. The only thing you can hope is that indeed this is just Epidemic figuring out a soft spot in the algorithm and taking advantage of it versus Spotify saying, we're going to, you know, kind of cut down the stream pool.
I would assuming that they're going to try to maximize their profit either way. If I were an indie artist right now, the thing I would be trying to do would be to increase my footprint, right? And if I said, okay, I make music to sleep by kind of thing, then I would do a thing. I would go to five other friends and say, okay, we're going to create a name. We're going to promote the same name. We're going to release all of our stuff under the same name, because if we have five people repeating this name and making good quality stuff that fits this sort of model, then we increase the likelihood of somebody saying, oh, yeah, play me the latest Night Sleeper track. You know, I want that, or play the Night Sleeper. That's what I would try to do, because it's like a bar. You know, if you walk in there and you say, you know, just give me a beer, they're going to give you the cheapest beer. You know, if you ask, don't ask for something specific. In magic, we dealt with this all the time, is magicians compete with each other because they're interchangeable. The ones that have name recognition don't compete with other people. And if you have an interchangeable product, then you will be replaced by another cheaper interchangeable product. And that's why you've got to build up the name. And like I said, the way to do that now is you think about collectives, you think about reimagining how it means to be a label or to work together, because that's what you want, is somebody to say, play, because if it costs the customer nothing, if there's no difference in the cost of the customer to ask for something that's more expensive, then you got to train them to ask for the thing by name. my opinion.
All right. Well, thank you guys for trying your best with that story.
No, it's no problem.
It wasn't trying to explain it that I was like,
it is a good, no, it's Bryce. It's a very real thing as a creative. It's the challenge we're in is, I had lunch with I don't know if you know him, a guy named Tom Merritt. And, we were talking about like how everybody's pushing for like, you know, like, oh, Facebook and all these things and Twitter, they need to regulate. And like, one, no, two, really no. You don't want those companies to get into the business of deciding what's facts or what's not, because one, having had a lot of experience in trying to teach critical thinking, we can have a very long discussion on what is a fact. The side note is like in Tom's point is like, you know, people should be sort of smarter and wiser. I'm like, yeah. And know the world we live in. And with this thing, like, I don't want to be callous about like, these artists and then Spotify. Like, yes, this is the world we live in. And we can say, no, we want Spotify to not do this and to treat us more fairly or pay us marketably. Maybe you could get a big movement to do that and change it. Eventually they will go away and there'll be some other thing. And it's better to just be adaptive and understand this is how I do this as an author. You know, like, I don't think about print at all. Like, I just signed an audiobook deal and it's a digital only. I'm like, sure, fine. Who do I know that listens to CDs and stuff?
Right. You don't want to get on that lucrative, what is it? Cracker Barrel audiobook lending program.
Yeah. Well, like, you do say, okay, the opportunity cost is I'm going to ignore this thing now because I know the future is going to be, I believe the future to be in this other place here. I did that when I signed with Amazon with publishing, is I knew that like, yeah, my print book sales are in decline and print book publishers are going to be way less inclined to make a deal with me because they're going to be, he's digital only. And I'm like, fine. I know the upside for me in being digital and I know where my growth, the fastest growing part of my audience is. But you have to, I guess it means you have to adapt. And even now it's like, you know, Amazon could come out with a book writing algorithm any day now. And I'd be like, Amazon's like, hey, Andrew, it's been a good run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks. There will be, we talked about this on Weird Things, God, at least a year ago, talking about like, well, what happens when, you know, what happens when there are when there is fully machine generated music. And I think there was some PR thing from maybe the past few weeks where an advertising company went and did that, not for a client, but just did it on their own. And you look more into it and it's like, well, they still had to do these parts human, you know, by the power of humans, but a lot of it was not. And because of how open music technology is, it's not going to be very long before we have to figure this out. I mean, it's already like they're starting to think about like, well, what are the legalities of if you make a machine learning song, but you only teach it on copyrighted music? Is that okay? I think that the leaning is that legally it is okay, but
I went through this with a company about text and stuff because I was asked about trying to help them do sort of things with books and stuff. And that was the long discussion about like that we don't have the law to specifically say what's legal or what's not legal. I would presume to believe that after a period of time that it would be entirely legal because it's a new work. I can take four different works, combine them, and derive something new from them if I'm using multiple works. That would be my presumption. We can only make presumptions, but that is the world we live in. But, you know, the GarageBand was disruptive. And if you were a person who invested a lot in better tools and old studio equipment and all that, GarageBand was frustrating because in one hand, it's not that good. Well, GarageBand got a lot better. GarageBand gave us like Billie Eilish, you know, and gave us a generation of artists, you know, Rock Band gave us Post Malone, you know,
yeah.
And we have an entirely new generation of artists that we're always going to want them because there's going to be places, the music to sleep by, yeah, make a robot make it, but then I'm going to want music by a personality and by a person. And I think that's the thing everybody has to think about is you've got to put your person more into it because it's going to be, I'm either going to buy things from people or I'm going to have machines take care of everything else.
It's very interesting. There's an interesting thing happening on TikTok right now where there's a new, it's not that new, relatively speaking, but there's a new song that is one of the many TikTok sort of viral memes called Say So from this artist Doja Cat. And it's interesting that if I was a little more conspiratorial minded, I would think, oh, TikTok saw how popular Lil Nas X was on its platform. What if they took another viral song? And like the thing is, so like the song has been out for months and months and months. It's only now getting a music video, but the music video is getting some promotion. People are clipping it, putting it out. And on TikTok, where it's all, or it's mostly algorithm based, it's just, it's interesting to see them try. It feels like TikTok is trying to do their own Lil Nas X style push with this Doja Cat thing. And I think it's kind of working because I've seen rumblings of it in the normal places where that stuff kind of doesn't surface.
I 100% believe that, like, you know, there are people within these different, whenever there are eyeballs to be, you saw YouTube Studios. Oh, that's great. YouTube Studios. Yeah. YouTube Studios is also like, how do we get a piece of the, of more, a bigger piece of the YouTube pie that we've created to this platform by having our own artists, our own people to promote. We see this everywhere. And I totally believe in the case of Spotify that they will be creating content or incentivizing content. They have better deals because it's what you need. They need to maximize the content. Like, their margins are not that great.
Sure.
You know, and they're facing a threat from, you know, their biggest competitor now is the largest company in the world, you know, with Apple willing to take a loss for years.
Yeah.
To get Apple Music in place, you know.
Yeah. Some thoughts. If anybody has thoughts, please send them in neshcom@gmail.com and put after things in the headline, in the subject line. Yeah. And maybe we'll have your opinions next time on the show.
All right, here's my suggestion for picks right now. Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
I need help. I'm putting together my new office as I'm moving into my new place, and I need suggestions for, like, cable organizers, desk, workspace. What are little hacks? What are little things you suggest?
Man, I am not good at cable organizing.
anything, desk, anything.
Yeah, I mean, I got a standing desk from John Teasdale, who did a little California do-si-do moving out of San Francisco and then back to San Francisco. But in the process, I got a standing desk, which I really liked. It gives me a place outside of the studio where I can use, I can kind of have separation if Ashley's doing something in here. But I don't know the name of it offhand, but, I think it's helpful.
Let me see if I can look up the desk that I have at home. It's from IKEA, but I don't think it is. I don't think it's like a computer desk. I think it's one of their like side table desks because it's a little thicker. Give me a minute to look
well,
it up.
I have a big L-shaped desk in there. I got a big L-shaped desk. I was tempted to buy. I saw one that was an elevated one, but I didn't do that. But anything else you have, like I don't know, like. Or charging organizers or anything else like this, any of the little hat, you know, any little pieces of advice you have on.
Oh, you know what? Get one of those USB multi plugs. So you plug it in. So you plug the device into power and it has like six or more USB hubs. I have one of those in. You've got one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good suggestion, though.
Other life hack. Get one of those and put it in your couch. And then you got charging cables under your cushion of your couch.
There is a thought. That's a very interesting idea. See?
Yeah. I've always been of the opinion that, like, and this was more, I don't know if it's still relevant, but you can never go wrong. If you want to buy somebody that you love dearly a present and they have like a MacBook, like you can never go wrong with another MacBook charger. Nobody's ever in their lives said like, God damn it, too many of these MacBook chargers. It's always the other side of like, oh god damn, I forgot it. And it's like one for the car, one for your bag, one for
That's a great suggestion because I'm thinking about, because like we'll have like the kitchen dining area and we have the living room area, and I'm thinking like it might be sort of neat to provide, because we got like a counter style table for the kitchen, which I love those. And I said, it might be practical to figure out a way to make it very easy if somebody puts their MacBook there, whatever, to get power, which might mean just putting like a bin or a little container next to the outlet or attached to the wall, you know, fashionably, tastefully, but you could just pull a cable from there and have power and do that. Cause that is the thing that, like, you know, you look around, I look around at where chaos happens, and, you know, I've got a thing on our counter here, just tons of chargers and cables and stuff, because, oh, it's USB. No, it's USB-C. Oh, it's lightning. It's this, it's that. And, you know, you just, these devices proliferate, they don't reduce. So,
Well, that's a, one thing that might be good to look at if you haven't already is lighting for a desk. Or, you know, you're probably going to do your streaming here from, for Weird Things at it. You do some of the Periscope stuff, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to look up the one that I have, but I look up it on Amazon and the lot has been replaced with a set of noise canceling headphones. So, just Amazon.com working really great right now.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of those. And then the one that I have has a USB plug in it. So I can plug in, I have a wireless charger for my phone on my desk. And so it can plug right into the lamp there. And it's dimmable and you can change all the color temperatures if you'd like.
Yeah, I've got one of those. But yeah, totally. Okay. No, that's a suggestion. I think that's one of the things I'm thinking about is, I love now, like when I first built my studio, like easy LED ring lights weren't around, and now all that stuff is there, and I can put, you know, very low impact kind of lighting stuff in there that's unobtrusive.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I had to fill out all these foreign tax forms last night, so I just went over to the new place to go do it because there's a lot more work surface area. And the first thing I know is like, man, I need a good desk lamp because it's dim in here, you know? Yeah.
Floor protector. If you've got a rolly chair and you don't have a floor protector, get a floor protector. I just and I really needed it because my wood covering, whatever, was starting to curl.
I wanted to go do my tax forms. I waited to do them because the protector hadn't arrived yet. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to put a chair. I was on carpet. I don't know if I want to put a chair down on the carpet until I get the protector, you know, but then I'm like, I got to get it done. So cool. Well, this is very helpful, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Good.
I'm going to put noise canceling there, but I don't think I'm going to do a full wall. I think I'm just going to do parts of sections, but just minimize some of the echo.
Yeah, just get some of the cheap panels that they've got on Amazon and throw it all up. I'm sure you already know all about it, yeah.
So last question is, and this might be helpful to other people too, is I have a feeling this part of the house will get very hot. Mm. Any of you any experience with small portable air conditioners or anything like that in the studio?
No, I mean, the hottest studio I had to work in was in a warehouse in Margate, Florida. So where I had to turn off the air conditioner to record anything. But I would say, yeah, just I mostly just use an oscillating big fan thing.
Have not used it in a studio setting, but the Dyson makes one of those tall fan things.
Yeah.
Those are pretty good and pretty quiet. I would not be surprised if that would be good enough for you to have.
Yeah, I got a smaller dice in here and I like it because it's quiet and it does a pretty good job. So
yeah, cool. I know that they make a taller one, kind of a tower.
Yeah, seen that.
One.
Yeah,
those are pretty good too.
So, side note of might be useful is that I needed to. One is I went in, I put in like an IKEA curtain to sort of separate sort of the space. And those were not as terribly difficult to install as I was afraid they would be. Which if you're looking for like, you know, a way to separate space. So IKEA has this curtain track, which you can hang from overhead, whatever, which is pretty nice.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then I did what's wonderful about the place is, fiber. So I have, 500 megabit. Inside of there, which is insane for compared to where I'm coming from here, which is like, you know, annoyingly no. I got the Amazon Eero Pro Mesh, and the difference between like a repeater and a mesh is, you know, basically is more efficient and gives you, you know, spreads your Wi-Fi throughout the place. So I put a mesh in the house. So that's nice is that I've got.
I love that. Love those. Yeah. We got Eeros all through here because a lot of this is an old building, so Wi-Fi gets knocked down pretty easily, but they have been awesome.
Are you finding that the speed on those mesh? I've never used a mesh network or a Wi-Fi extender. Is the speed consistent? Is there any loss of speed?
Not that I notice.
Wow. Okay.
My 500 megabit went down to 250 megabit.
Okay, I mean, that's still 250 megabits.
Yeah, and I got the one that was supposed to not do that, and I got to go check the settings, but I also know that right now I'm on a 10 megabit, so I think that, you know, up, so I think that, you know, having something that's merely 25 times faster than what I'm using right now will probably be acceptable, but there, sometimes that is the issue with that, but I got that, and then, yeah, the speed, I mean, and part of what you want to, part of the point of having like a mesh isn't just the fact of like having walls too. When you live in an apartment complex, you have all this other Wi-Fi competing with you.
Mm. All the other networks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I think we have Eero. I think Eero is what we have here at the studio here, because I think that's how Brian gets it out in his office shack. Cool. Well, that's pretty cool. Eero. E-E-R-O.
Yeah.
Nice. Any other office productivity thing?
The Portal fans from the chat suggestion, that sounds great. I'll look into the Dyson stuff for that, because that is one of the things where I'm looking at, like they, this unit, it's like an older building. Like, I'll watch movies set in Hollywood, and, you know, and I'll see this building in it. Yeah. But which means shows you when things were built. But the, which means it, like, the everything is old. It's like there's only one AC unit in this place. So,
if you don't have one, always very helpful to get an arm rest for your keyboard and a mouse pad with an arm rest built into it. Yep. I prefer the cloth ones, but I think it's cheaper for them to make like plastic with the gel stuff. But I prefer the cloth and the fabric ones. It's a little softer on the skin.
Yeah.
Look for those.
Oh, that's been very helpful.
Yeah.
I've got an After Things pick, I suppose. If we're are we still going to do other picks?
Yeah, let's do picks. Yeah, sure.
I got a pick. So, Ashley, my wife and I we may or may not be going on vacation in a couple months, depending on you know, how this coronavirus stuff shakes out, but we were thinking about going to Germany. And so Ashley is trying to brush up on her German, because she spoke German with her family as a child, and she wants to be able to be, you know, semi-conversant when we're out there. And so she's been watching German movies. Oh. One of the German movies that I saw that was very interesting is Look Who's Back, a 2015 comedy.
Oh, God. I remember this. It's the Hitler movie.
So I watched Look Who's Back.
How's Look Who's Back?
Man, it goes some places. it starts, the movie begins with a very kind of lighthearted, almost like a Jackass-esque kind of like a blending or Borat-esque kind of blending of a storyline with like live what seems to be live interactions of him talking to modern Germans. The story, if you are unfamiliar, is all of a sudden Hitler's just back, and there's a guy who is fired from a job at a TV network who decide you know, he winds up going viral with this clip of Hitler, and now Hitler kind of becomes this ascendant sort of media figure, as nobody's able to figure out whether or not he's a performance artist or he's just like an actor doing this very deep sort of role. But it takes a bit of a turn and begins to get kind of darker and darker as Hitler sort of begins to again rise in power in Ooh. Germany. So, It's one of those movies where obviously, I mean, there are like laws in, you know, German laws about how you can talk about or even laugh about the Nazis and Hitler specifically. So I think it takes a turn that I think might be legally required in German media, but certainly an interesting flick, and you don't lose a ton just watching it with subtitles. So Look Who's Back.
All right, I got a pick. If anybody did either, you guys probably didn't see this. I think it came out on Netflix last year. The End of the Effing World.
I'm familiar with it, but I have not seen it. No.
So supposedly that was based off of a graphic novel or a comic series, and there's a new Netflix series adaptation from the same author called I Am Not Okay With This. It is a story about just a plain old everyday American humdrum girl who has anger issues and realizes she has some sort of superpower. It is played. It is very indie movie-esque. It is very twee and not hipster. It wouldn't be hipster, but it's very like modern day indie teen film take. It is hard to describe because calling the notion of an indie movie has changed so much in the past decade. But it's I think it's pretty neat. It is an easy watch, just like I think End of the Effing World was. And it actually reminded me a lot of, if anybody's played the game Life is Strange, it reminds me a lot of the video game Life is Strange, which is all I'll say about that. But yeah, I Am Not Okay With This on Netflix now.
Cool. You know, I will, as far as a media pick, I'm going to just throw out there again my two of my favorite YouTube channels, which I get a lot of information from. One is Scott Manley, who covers space stuff. Scott's stuff is really good. And then 2 Minute Papers, which is another really good one, which covers like science research stuff. And I pull a lot of the content that I talk about here will sometimes be stuff that's covered there as well. And just really good. They're both just that we live in this wonderful age of gifted explainers. Both of these people, Scott Manley is got a PhD in astronomy. And so, and he's very knowledgeable about aeronautics and stuff too. So it's neat to listen to somebody who is an expert in their field who now has his platform via YouTube. And then 2 Minute Papers, I cannot pronounce his name, but he has his PhD in, I think, some form of computer science relating to artificial intelligence, machine learning, and he publishes and stuff. And he's got this wonderful enthusiasm in which he explains the latest developments. Like the latest article, if you see this thing of a bird right below on the uploads, Bryce, is... he'll do these, covers these things pretty quickly. And he talks about, in that case is creating a 3D object from a photo. It's in sometimes, oh, we've heard of this. Like this is the latest algorithm for that. And he'll show you the improvements that are being made. And so this is an algorithm that looks at a 2D photo and extracts 3D objects from it and all sorts of cool stuff come
That's
out.
That's incredible.
So, yeah. Wow. Very cool. And it blows your mind. It's like when I talk about like, oh, things are coming, people are like, oh, you're crazy. I'm like, no, like I can show you what's in the lab now. And, you know, we're only so much, you know, not too far away from everything getting terrifying.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. Very awesome. And this is, you know, so anyhow, those are my picks. Groovy.
Sweet.
Nice.
It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.